Fanning, weekends on 2FM.
Now, in his new book, The Age of Static, How TV Explains Modern Britain, author Philip Harrison argues that television isn't always taken as seriously as it deserves to be and is often unfairly dismissed as the most disposable, least permanent of art forms. He believes that shows like Father Ted, Big Brother, Top Gear, The Great British Bake Off and many more have more of an influence than we might think. And he's on the line now to explain why. Phil, you're very welcome to the programme. First of all, Phil, I know the title of the book refers to Britain, but I'm sure many of your observations are applicable to Ireland as well, because, you know, we watch many of the same TV shows. In fact, on that note, let's start from an Irish point of view. Why do you think shows like Father Ted and Mrs. Brown's Boys were so successful and still are in the UK?
I can't speak for the success of Mrs. Brown's Boys, if I'm honest. What I would say about Father Ted is I feel like it's one of those shows that sort of has something for everyone almost. There's a real sort of intelligence to it, but there's a very sort of basic sort of silliness to it and a sort of joy to it as well. It's very self-aware, but it's also sort of funny on a really sort of classical level as well. I think it's very universal, basically.
OK, well, let's move to reality television for a second, because this is some of the big ones. We're talking about the last 20 years here. So in relation to Big Brother, do you think that it was as much a social experiment as TV entertainment and that it managed to mirror society pretty convincingly, maybe?
I mean, I think it started as a social experiment, and I think there's a certain amount of sort of evolution or devolution as it went along almost. I mean, the first few, which I watched sort of parts of in the course of researching this, are really fascinating because they're a huge mixture of demographics and of ages and of sort of personality types. And there's a real sense of sort of genuine diversity about them. And I think as it went on, it became more of a sort of like, it became more homogenous and it became the basis for a certain kind of sort of career rather than, I think the sort of sociological experiment element of it sort of disappeared as time went on.
So do you think the success of Big Brother is a landmark for all that came after it? I mean, the likes of I'm a Celebrity, The Apprentice, Dragon's Den. Do we have an insatiable appetite basically for reality TV?
I mean, I think we do, but I actually wonder how the pandemic will affect this, to be honest, because I feel almost like what's happened over the last 6 months has almost sort of formatted our lives a bit. And it can feel like we're living in our own sort of Big Brother houses at the moment, what with Zoom calls and sort of only being able to go to certain places at certain times. So I don't know. I mean, I suspect that there is probably a bit of a change. And the other thing I would say is there is an element of cruelty to these shows, and I suspect there's a bit of a kickback against that now.
OK, but I mean, possibly, but I mean, just taking the years that we have these programmes, Big Brother, The Apprentice, Benefit Street, I suppose we should throw in there as well. I mean, if we are talking here about an indispensable roadmap of the British psyche, do you think, you know, basically, what did they tell us about modern Britain to you? I'll stay with Britain for a second, because you've mentioned the word cruelty, but could I mention decline, failure, rejection of thought?
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking quite a lot about The Apprentice, for example, and I mean that's a sort of competitive reality show, and I don't think it really got anything to say about actually how business works, but it does have quite a lot to say about the structures in which we all sort of live our lives these days in terms of sort of precarity and, you know, the lack of a job for life. And you know, that is a symbol of decline, isn't it? It has gone hand in hand with, for example, a decline in trade union membership. Just generally sort of the sort of business attitude taking over from anything vocational in terms of education. I think that has been quite a significant thing, actually, The Apprentice.
Do you think the TV companies now realise that in the last, say, two decades, that the whole idea of dysfunction is a very sort of grimly marketable commodity?
Yeah, I mean, I talk in the book about the career trajectory of Kerry Katona, for example, who, I mean, I have no particular urge to criticise Kerry Katona because she sort of took her chance. But, you know, I got the feeling that the dysfunction was actually part of the entertainment in terms of the way her career trajectory was handled. And, you know, she made documentaries talking about her struggles with sort of eating disorders and things like that. And I think it's a very, very queasy thing to be marketing as entertainment. And, you know, good luck to her. But I do find it very troubling.
Do you think the lines are blurring somewhat? I mean, do you think the political figures in the UK have learned a thing or two from reality TV, and have these shows blurred the lines between politics and showbiz?
Absolutely. I mean, I think Boris Johnson's a perfect example of that, actually. I think he's a soundbite politician. He's a presentational sort of politician rather than a sort of substance politician. However you feel about his policies, I think, or lack of policies, really, it's very hard to know what he stands for. I mean, I live in London, and he was the mayor of this city for a decade, and he manifested himself as a sort of inclusive liberal for that period because that was what London wanted, I guess. And when you look at him now, you think these are two different people almost. And I think you sort of face the audience in a sort of whatever they want me to be, I will be sort of way. And I think that is definitely a product of reality TV.
OK, well, what about a product of these 20 years? Because, by the way, we're looking at The Age of Static, How TV Explains Modern Britain, with its author, Philip Harrison. And if you think about it, like, is it important that reality TV and social media were both born at the same time?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, they've sort of fed into each other and sort of exponentially multiplied each other. I mean, you were talking about Benefit Street earlier, and I remember very clearly during the first series of that, they would put hashtags to encourage you to tweet about it during at particularly sort of controversial moments in the show. And it felt very much like they were orchestrating particular kinds of reactions to particular incidents. And I don't know, that feels like, I suppose it marketed itself as a documentary, but that felt like a real blurring of the line between sort of documentary and something slightly more alarming, really.
Do you know, I want to get into the class side of things. In fact, I will now with this one, because like Fleabag is a good example of something. The character is as dysfunctional as a man, and that's one of the most important things about it. But it's kind of cool because she's middle class. If this was set in working class, we'd all be shamed, or somebody would be shamed.
Yes. I mean, I first thing to say, actually, is I really like Fleabag. I think it's a great show. But you do have to wonder how the trajectory of that character would have played out had Fleabag been working class or BAME or whatever. And you think there might have been sort of like a reckoning for her at some point. She might have been redeemed, but only if she changed her ways. I think there would have been a sort of morality play constructed around that character had she been from a different class background. And that isn't really meant as a criticism of Fleabag, actually. It's meant as a criticism of other things that sort of we might compare to it.
Well, then let's jump to Vicky Pollard, Matt Lucas, shamed working class girl. Like, you know, yeah. I mean, like running in parallel alongside the reality TV shows are things like this, The Office, Little Britain, etc. Were these true to real life and will they age well?
I think Little Britain is already really aging badly, actually. Mm. I mean, my problem with that is where it comes from. You've got two privately educated men taking the mick out of a working class woman, a teenage working class woman. And, you know, the best comedy punches up, doesn't it? And that really doesn't feel like it's punching up. It feels like it's mocking someone who was already quite near the bottom of things, if you see what I mean.
I do, but like, can you take it too far if you say, like, programmes like Location, 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 or Downton Abbey, or The Great British Bake Off, that they fetishise the middle classes? Is that too much?
I think, I mean, you get into a sort of chicken and egg here thing, don't you?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, which comes first? Does the fetishisation of the middle classes lead to the creation of a programme like Location, or is it the other way around? I think there's sort of a lot of economic factors at play in something like Location as well. I feel like there's been, as I think there is in Ireland as well, a serious problem with sort of affordable housing. And I feel like a certain generation of people got a once-in-a-lifetime deal and a chance to own or occupy and a chance to buy second homes. And the following generations really aren't going to have that chance. And I think something like Location really, it feels aspirational, but in a sense that lots of people can't possibly have that aspiration. It's almost like you're on the outside looking in. It's quite an alienating experience watching that show when you have so little prospect of ownership yourself.
So would you say that TV is now as it used not be, or maybe it always has been, a part of our culture war. I mean, can we blame the BBC for Katie Hopkins, Nigel Farage, etc.?
No, I mean, I think it is part of our culture war, but that said, I don't think anyone could possibly have imagined what Katie Hopkins would become when she was on The Apprentice, just as they couldn't possibly imagine what Donald Trump would become when he was sort of hosting The Apprentice. But, I mean, I do think that in terms of the culture war, I think that things like Top Gear were very significant. I think they started the process of sort of codifying that white, middle-aged, provincial discontent. That sort of irritation with political correctness that would probably now sort of correlate to anti-woke, as it would probably be called now. Yeah. And just the sense of laddish, consequence-free banter, which, you know, can be fun, but can also be alienating and can also be sort of hide troubling sort of subtexts as well.
So can we take anything from the fact that Top Gear got too big for its boots?
Well, I mean, I think for years Top Gear was actually quite a brilliant thing for the BBC, because obviously the BBC constantly gets criticised for being metropolitan, elitist, middle class, liberal, etc. And I think whilst they had Top Gear, there was always a way for them to say, but, you know, we don't go along with the political correctness thing all the way, and we have this show. And I think for that reason, it was probably able to sort of carry on a lot longer than it might have been otherwise. Yeah. So I think it did push its luck, and I think probably they had no choice but to sack them in the end. But I think it worked for both parties for a long time, actually.
And where would you put programmes like This Is England or Shameless or The Detectorists or any of those? Of all of those, the only one I've seen is about two episodes of The Detectorists, which I thought was very good, actually. But Brass Eye. I mean, Brass Eye did start off well, didn't it? But did it veer too far?
Brass Eye, I think, is a product of a different era, actually, really. I mean, there was an episode of Brass Eye in this century, which I've written about, the paedophile one. But, I mean, I think the 90s were a lot more reckless in sort of devil may care in terms of TV. It was a more reckless era, wasn't it? A more carefree era, I suppose. There is a lot of sensitivity around the issues it covers now, and I don't think people are quite as keen to be confronted these days. As for things like This Is England, I mean, I think what's brilliant about that is it's completely written and performed by people who clearly come from that world that is being dramatised. And I think that really shows, actually. It doesn't feel like a sort of focus grouped, overly sort of codified sort of piece of art. It feels like something that's actually come from the heart and from the people who've lived those lives.
Well, then let's go back to what the BBC or TV is meant to be, even if there is such a thing that it's meant to be something. I mean, should TV be an endless moral lesson or even a guidebook for decency?
No, not at all. I mean, I think TV is like any other art form, actually. I think, you know, you can do what you want with it, really. What I would say about the BBC is, because of the way it's funded and because we've all got a bit of a stake in it and because, you know, it is accountable to all of us, and we all have a right to criticise it, and when we don't feel like we're being represented by it, we can complain about that. Mm. And I think that's a great thing, actually. It means that, you know, it has to try and represent everyone, and that's why I think TV is such a fundamental thing to Britain, and also why the BBC is such a contested sort of space.
Just to get back to a programme I mentioned earlier on, The Great British Bake Off, why would somebody name a show The Great British something? I mean, is it as simple as, well, you know, that's who they are and that's what they're doing? Or do you think there's more to it than one would think with something like Bake Off?
Yes, I mean, I think the sort of iconography of old England and the sort of the notion of the village fate, and I don't know, there's something about the words The Great British that implies sort of continuity. This implies a thing that has been happening for years and years and years, and that we can rely on and sort of go back into our history and see it. I think the time that emerged was very important as well, because it was just as sort of Cameron became Prime Minister and austerity was about to hit, and we just sort of come through the recession and the financial crisis. And I think it was a show that was sort of like national bunting almost. It was like a show that was trying to sort of tell us who we were, and quite flatteringly. So, you know, I think it became a thing that represented something beyond perhaps just the making of cake and bread. It's a hard show to dislike because it's incredibly good-natured and the story it tells about us is very positive.
Yeah, I mean, like, speaking of incredibly good-natured too, I mean, Ant and Dec on a Saturday evening, that's what people want. It's perfect and there's nothing like it's great and all the rest. But hold up, I want to take a look at Downton Abbey here because most period dramas, you know, they tell us more about the period in which they were made, maybe, rather than the period in which they were set. So what does something like Downton Abbey tell us about modern-day Britain? And remember that I've heard somewhere that Downton Abbey is the most popular programme in the southern states of America. Beat that.
That's really interesting. It actually doesn't surprise
Bizarre.
Me. When you go to America, there's a sense that they sometimes think that Britain is like that all the way through.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And it's, you know, they've never seen like Hackney or whatever. But no, it's part of the iconography of sort of an idealized version of Britain, isn't it? And again, I mean, it was, without wishing to get too sort of party political about it, it was created by a Conservative Lord. And there's something very sort of consolatory about it. The other thing I would say about Downton is, you know, it has the stylings of, you know, a Jane Austen adaptation or something like that, but it doesn't have sort of literary weight of those kinds of things. It feels like almost a bit of a facsimile of those kind of things. So it gives us all the sort of like slightly simplistic moral messages, but it doesn't give us any of the sort of paradoxes and the the slight sort of sense of subversion that exists in those literary pieces.
Yeah, and as you say at one stage, David Cameron was a very Downton Abbey sort of politician. He was once said to have risen without trace through the Conservative Party, etc. Can I just ask one last question about this? By the way, we're talking The Age of Static, How TV Explains Modern Britain. It's Philip Harrison and it's Melville House UK. It's out now. And that is just to get back to something which is really at the core of a lot of it. Does TV sit in judgment too often of the working class? I mean, like, if you look at Benefit Street, I could say shame. Secret Millionaire, patronising. And then it dares to tell people how to live, maybe, like Jamie's School Dinners or something.
I mean, yes, I think there was certainly a phase, wasn't there? I mean, those shows that you just mentioned, which I write about in the book, all happened within about sort of 4 or 5 years of each other. And I think it sort of coincided with a sort of slightly ugly chav baiting, Asbos, all that kind of stuff. And I think particularly Benefit Street, there was something very sort of troubling about that show, the way it almost tended to use the sort of pornography of poverty as a sort of source of entertainment. I mean, Jamie's School Dinners was patronising, as you say, but also very well-intentioned, I suspect.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, I mean, I think it does. And I think the only answer to that is more working-class people need to be involved in television.
Right, indeed. Well, on that note, it's The Age of Static, How TV Explains Modern Britain. Philip Harrison. Philip, thank you very much for being with
Thanks
us on the programme today.
Thank you so much.
All right, good luck. Take it easy.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Dave Fanning, weekends on 2FM.